Hi, this is Leo, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, April 8th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. Our thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth for this podcast. This is show number 237.
April 8th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you, Deborah. Good morning, everyone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I'm here today till 2 to talk tech with you. 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. As I mentioned to Bill, we'll talk a little bit about online billing. There's really two ways to do bill pay these days. There's independent companies like the one I use, which is Intuit's PayTrust, and then it's through your bank. There's kind of a difference. The PayTrust guys, you send your bills to them, which I like. I don't see any bills. They open them, enter them into the computer, scan them in, and then pay them. And I like that a lot. But I'd also like to get your impressions, because I haven't used them all. I've only used a couple. I've used Bank of America's, and I've used PayTrust. So I'd love to hear from you about what your experience has been. 1-800-520-1KFI. If you've used an online bill pay service, I'd love to hear from you about what services you've used, what you like, what you don't like about them, what's good, what's bad. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1KFI. What is this sound? Oh, I have my son's phone. I didn't realize. Turn that off. 1-800-520-1KFI. Now, let's talk a little bit about the big story of the week, which is, of course, Apple releasing a program. They call it Bootcamp, that lets you legally and easily put Windows on a Mac. This was, it's an interesting story. First of all, in a way, it's sleeping with the enemy. I mean, it's kind of an amazing thing for Apple to do. But popular demand, right? I mean, this is something people would like to be able to do. In fact, so much so that you remember that somebody offered a $13,000 reward, and two hackers, Blanca and Narf, were able to come up with a way to do it themselves just a few weeks ago. I think Apple's had this for a while. Didn't want to take the $13,000 reward, so they waited till the hackers came up with a way, then waited a judicious couple of weeks so it didn't look like they were doing a Me Too, and then said, we can do that too. I'll tell you why, in retrospect, it was obvious that Apple was going to do this. But let me talk a little bit about the challenge of it. Apple kind of got bit by Microsoft and Intel here. They, of course, when they built the new Intel Macs, wanted to use the latest, greatest technology, the top-of-the-line PC technology. They're using the latest Intel chips. And they believed in this new way of booting PCs called EFI, the Extensible Firmware Interface. Now, understand, they didn't make this up. Microsoft and Intel jointly made this up. So imagine their surprise when they find out, first of all, that, well, maybe this wasn't so surprising, the current version of Windows doesn't support EFI. XP will not boot on EFI. It will only boot on the old style, the 20-year-old BIOS system. You remember BIOS, right? We talk about BIOS. I've been talking about BIOS for 20 years now. There's a newer way and a better way, but XP doesn't support it. Microsoft says that's because there are no PCs that use EFI, even though we came up with it. Since nobody's using it, only a very few high-end PCs use it, we're not going to support it. But then here's the thing that must have stung Apple. They also said, and by the way, Vista's not going to support it either. The next version of Windows out next year, it won't support it either. Now, Apple, when they announced their Intels, never mentioned Windows, didn't mention compatibility, didn't say you could or couldn't boot. They just ignored it. And this surprised me. Because really, one of the main reasons why the Intel move looked good to me from a business point of view was it would open up Apple as a hardware manufacturer. Remember, Apple's business is not operating systems like Microsoft. Apple's business is computers. It would open up a whole new market for them, selling their computers to companies that wanted to run both Mac and Windows. That's potentially a big market. It certainly eliminates a big complaint about Macs, which is you can't run Windows software on them. or not very well anyway. So I thought, you know, in my infinite wisdom, wow, Steve Jobs. At first, you may remember my reaction to the Intel announcement was, oh, no. After I thought about it for a few weeks, I thought, oh, maybe this isn't such a bad idea. In fact, it's quite smart. Steve's going to open up a new market. It's going to help them with sales. It's a brilliant masterstroke. Not only do they, you know, move, and as it turned out, very easily move everything over to Intel, but now they can run Windows. So imagine my surprise when they don't mention Windows. They don't work with Windows. I thought, oh, I guess I misunderstood. Once again, Steve Jobs and his brilliance. I completely misunderstood what his plan was. Well, maybe not. Maybe it just took him a little longer to get this EFI thing working. See, you can't, if you don't support EFI, then you have to write code, low-level drivers, and add them to Windows. You have to modify Windows to get it to work. At least that's what we thought. That's what Blank and Narfa did. Now, let's talk about this new thing that Apple announced this week. What a shocker. It's called Boot Camp. Doesn't modify Windows. You don't have to make a special install disk. Now, I think what really happened was, it's not so much this program Boot Camp. What Apple snuck out into the marketplace with the 10.4.6, an update for OS 10, and a new firmware update for the Intels, what they snuck out was BIOS compatibility. They actually modified their own firmware, showing, by the way, the brilliance of EFI. That's the whole point of the extensible firmware interface. They extended it and made it support BIOS booting. So really, that only Apple could do that because they control the firmware on the computer. They totally control that. It would be illegal to hack it. So it's quite a clever solution, and apparently Apple had it all along. It must have. They certainly didn't develop this in 2 weeks. I'm not sure when they pushed this firmware update, but it's pretty recent. Well, I did it. I downloaded Boot Camp, went out and bought a copy of Windows. Oh, did that hurt? Do you know how much Windows costs? Probably like me, most of you have never bought Windows in a box. It comes with the computer most of the time, right? You get Windows when you get a new computer. So I hadn't really paid attention to how expensive Windows is. Now, I have an iMac with a dual core, so I needed Windows Professional to take advantage of the two processors. It will not work with an upgrade version. I could have legally bought an upgrade version, but it won't work with an upgrade version because I have, you know, standalone versions of other Windows. Actually, I wonder if that's, I think maybe not legal. I think to be perfectly legal, I had to buy a whole new copy of a standalone Windows XP Professional. You want to take a guess how much that costs? I thought, oh, maybe $100-$200, right? $300. No wonder Bill Gates is the richest man in the world. It pained me to plunk my credit card down and buy it. But I bought a brand new copy of Windows XP Professional, not the upgrade, 300 smackers. Ouch! I think actually this would be a good test for all computer journalists. Do you remember was it 1980 election or the 84 election? I think it was when George W. Bush was George Herbert Walker Bush, Grandpa Bush, was running against Reagan in '80. Of course, he became the vice president later, but he was initially running. I believe it was that. In any event, the reporters asked him how much a loaf of bread cost, a quart of milk, and he had no idea. And the idea, I guess, for the reporter was to show that, you know, he's not in touch with the common man. Well, I think they should ask computer journalists, how much does a shrink-wrapped box of Windows cost? Because I tell you, I wouldn't have been able to answer. I think if you'd really pushed me, I would have said $229. Wouldn't have said $300. Wow. You have to buy the professional and you can't buy the upgrade. And I'm looking longingly at the home version and the upgrade versions. They're much cheaper. You have to buy a full version of Windows, which I'd never done before. 300 smackers. Anyway, last night I sat down. Apple provides this program called Boot Camp. You run it. The first thing it does is repartitions your hard drive. Now, this is very elegant. Without deleting any data, non-destructively, like partition magic, divides your hard drive up, You say how much you want to allocate to Windows, how much to the Mac. Unfortunately, it didn't work because I had been using my Mac long enough. There were files I couldn't move. I guess maybe it was too fragmented. I'm not sure what was going on, but it said, no, sorry, I can't. You have to reformat. So, and I backed up all my data. Good excuse to back it up. Had an external hard drive. It was easy to do. Backed all my data up. Reformatted, reinstalled OS X, so it was just like it came from the factory. Then ran boot camp, and it was beautiful. It just took, it didn't take long. It took a few minutes. Created a 10 gigabyte partition for Windows. I mean, that's how much I was willing to allocate to it. It was done. One of the things it does before it does that, it says, okay, put a blank CD in. We're going to make a Windows driver disk. Now, this is elegant. This is slick. We're going to put on a CD all the drivers you need for Windows to support this IMAX hardware. Did that. Burned the disk. It said, okay, put your copy of Windows in. I did. It rebooted, installed Windows, went through the whole Windows install. At the end of the install, Windows is running. I have the choice to boot into Mac or Windows. I inserted the driver disk. It installed the ATI drivers, the network card drivers, the sound card drivers. Worked flawlessly. The only drivers, the only things I understand that it doesn't support the built-in EyeSight camera. Windows sees that there's a USB camera there, but it doesn't have a driver for it. So I think that's just a matter of days probably before they ship a driver for that. And there's one other, I think, the remote control it doesn't support. Which you wouldn't expect it to. At least I wouldn't. But otherwise, it works just like Windows. Installed Firefox right away. Installed Nod32 right away. Updated right away, of course. That's the first thing I did. Ran Windows Update. You have to have Service Pack 2, by the way. It has to be a Windows XP full edition with Service Pack 2. That's probably because it won't recognize the hard drive without Service Pack 2. But there it is. It's booting into Windows. It runs great. And now I have a PC, a computer that is both Windows and Mac. And I think that's a great thing. But that's not all. Now, there's a company called Parallels that has come up with, and I haven't tried yet. I'm kind of intrigued by it. They say the ability to run Windows on Mac at the same time as you're running OS X. Whoa. That's what I really hope for. Now, why is this important? I think a lot of Windows people are saying, yeah, yawn, so what? Why is this important? I'll tell you why it's important. Because I don't want to think about what operating system I'm running. And I don't think real people care. You certainly don't ask your toaster what operating system it's running, or your TV. You don't ask your TiVo what operating system are you running. You don't care. What we would like as users to do, I think, I would say, and if you think about it, I think you'll agree, is just run programs. We don't want to worry about if we're running Unix, Linux, Mac, Windows, Solaris, BSD, Pocket PC. Who cares? People don't, well, maybe some people, most people don't fall in love with an operating system. They what they like is how the computer does the job. And that's software. That's what programs you're running, not what operating system you're running. So I would submit that the best way to do this is to be operating, is to completely not care about the operating system. And that's the idea of this seamless Windows, which I've always wanted. You're running OS X. You double-click a Windows app, it runs. You double-click a Mac app, it runs. Now, Tastes Like Lead in the chat room says he's been using Parallel and it works. So I guess that's my next thing. I'll have to go home and install that. It is a little slower. It's because it's not, you know, Windows running on the Mac, when you boot into Windows, runs exactly as well as it does on a PC. In fact, because this Mac has such high-end hardware, it runs very well. The virtualization will slow it down a little bit. But there is a public beta out. You can try it. Parallels.com. And I will give it a shot. And I'll get back to you. I think, you know, this is exciting. And there's some drawbacks. You can't read NTFS disks from within OS X. You can't read OS X disks within NTFS. I don't know if boot camp in its current state allows you to create a partition, a FAT32 partition. That's probably what you'd want to do and keep your data on that. Although that's limited to 32 gigs. So that's, you know, that's a limitation of FAT32. So that's not, you know, the greatest thing. I mean, ultimately, what I'd like to see is, and I guess you could install a 4Play or something so that you'd be able to see the Mac. That's probably the solution. See the Mac drive from the Windows. And I imagine somebody will write an NTFS driver for OS X, right? It's amazing. I think this is wonderful. Great news. What do you think? Let's talk about that. online bill paying, your experience or your questions, any comments or suggestions, 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. At 1120, I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
KFI News, powered by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI AM 640.
1127 KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Well, I you know, when I paid that $300 for Windows, I knew there was something wrong. Somebody in the chat room I think Acorn just told me that XP Home runs dual core. Oh man, I thought because you know XP Home couldn't run dual processors, well it wouldn't be able to run dual core. But apparently Microsoft made an exception.
Oh,
that could have saved me $80. Well, Justin Fresno, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Hello, Justin. Welcome.
How's it going, Leo?
Going great. How are you?
Good. I got a situation that's going to take you back to the screensaver days.
Yes.
I remember a guy named Mike, and he had a software company, mm-hmm. and he had the Microsoft domain.
Yeah.
And
I remember that. Yeah.
Well, what I got is I got a fairly big company that's trying to come after me and take away a domain that I own.
Right.
What
will happen is it will go to domain resolution.
Uh-huh.
And generally, if somebody has a trademark that's related to that name, they're going to get it.
Okay. Well, I made them offer on it, and they counter-offered me.
Uh-huh.
And so they're going to offer me money.
I would take the money, and I'll tell you why. Well, what you should do is go to ICANN and read about their Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy, okay?
Okay.
Because they'll tell you. But what will happen is you'll go into this dispute resolution, and they could award the name to this company without any compensation to you. So if the company's offering you money at this point, is it a lot of money?
It's about... I'm not into...
How tied are you to the name? Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind losing the name, and if they have the trademark or a related trademark, I would say take the money and run. I'll tell you what, go to ICANN.org, and read up on their domain name dispute resolution policy, and you'll see, you know, what they'll tell you, what, you know, basically give you the kind of indication about whether you'll win or lose. And at that point, you can make an intelligent decision about whether to take the money. If you think you're going to lose, if they have a legitimate claim to that name, I'd take the money. I think that's, in a way, generous of them to offer it. They probably just want it quick. They don't want to go through the process. 1129, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Deborah Marks in the KFI News Center.
Ken Gallagher, tomorrow, 3 to 5 p.m.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. Show notes are online at KFIAM640.com. Just click my name, Leo Laporte, on the left. That'll take you to the show notes. This is show 237, Saturday show 237 for, what is this, April the 8th. Amazing. I'm starting to catch up on the podcasts, by the way. A number of people have said, hey, where's all the old shows? And I apologize. I got a little behind. Once you get behind, it takes me a while, but I'm slowly catching up, and I've got most of them already edited, and I'll post them, and you'll be able to download them. So if you missed a show, you'll be able to hear it. Just go to the website, KFIAM640.com, and click my name, Leo Laporte, over there on the left. If you want to add to the show notes, if you hear something and you want to correct it, you can do that. There's a comment box right at the bottom there. And you can add comments like Sarah Jane did. She listens in the UK, and I was bemoaning the retail cost of a full version of Windows XP Professional Service Pack 2 at 300 smackers. She said, and I'll try to do this in my best posh accent, Windows XP in the UK from Amazon is £285.99, which at current exchange rates is almost $500. The good news is I mean, how often do you buy a shrink wrap box of Windows? Very rarely. Almost everybody buys it with a PC. Somebody asked, why didn't you get the Windows Media Center Edition? Well, maybe I could have, but it wouldn't have taken advantage. There'd be no advantage in doing it, and I'm not sure that it would work. Apple's very clear about what you need to buy. Windows XP Professional, Service Pack 2, full version. Actually, they said Home or Professional, and I should have investigated before I bought the full Professional. Could have saved a little money there. But I don't see any reason to buy the Media Center since it doesn't support the Apple hardware. And then another person asked, well, why don't you get the OEM edition? And you can buy an OEM edition of Windows, but it's a little sketchy. The OEM editions are sold to be built to be, you know, included with a new computer. They're for OEMs, original equipment manufacturers. In other words, PC manufacturers. The same thing with Windows Media Center. When you're buying it, you're really kind of violating the license. It's intended for system integrators, people building computers. And companies like Newegg that do sell it are kind of skirting the issue by insisting that when you buy it, you buy some parts to prove that you're building a computer. I think they're basically taking advantage of a loophole. No, I wanted to go the honest route. I wasn't going to get an OEM edition. Usually when you get an OEM copy, it's been stripped off a PC by an unscrupulous OEM. So I wanted to buy a real. I mean, hey, I'm law abiding. She choked me. And you know, the funny thing is, I have copies of Windows all over. I probably should. You know, I didn't. What I realized is, well, you know, I could just not activate it. Could install it and just not activate it, and at least I get to use it for 30 days. It would have been a good test. But I'm thinking, probably not going to keep it on the iMac, but I'm thinking if I ever get a MacBook Pro, I would love to have a dual boot laptop. That'd be very nice. So there's an advantage to it. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to Hercules and Ruth. Hello, Ruth. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
The problem that I had is my husband asked me to format a hard drive, and I accidentally
there's your problem
formatted
right there.
The wrong one.
Oh, no!
But it only formatted for about a minute or two, so I'm thinking that most of the data is probably still there.
It would be there even if you had not stopped it.
Okay. How
did you stop it, just out of curiosity?
I think I just turned it off.
Yeah, that's the worst possible thing you could have done.
I don't remember what I did exactly.
Yeah, next time, let it go.
Okay.
Because if it formats it, most of your data is still there. Formatting, all formatting does is write a new table of contents on the drive, unless you do a thorough format. But a quick format doesn't change anything. However, if you reboot a machine when it's writing to the hard drive, you can destroy all your data or a good chunk of it. So resetting, rebooting, quitting, you know, you can't quit out of a format. So anything that you did to get out of it risked damaging the data more than the format did. However, having said that, yeah, there are a lot of programs that will unformat your hard drive. Almost any unerase program will detect the data on there and try to save it. But I got to warn you, you may not be able to save as much as you would hope because of the way you shut it down.
Yeah.
And your husband's giving you intense grief, I'm sure, on this.
A little bit in the beginning, but not so much.
Yeah, he made you do it. You should say, honey, next time, you format the hard drive. You do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have any recommendations on undelete programs. I used a program when I had a similar... By the way, this happens to everybody, so don't feel bad. I had a similar problem very recently, and I bought a program called Active Undelete. That seemed, after looking at all the reviews, to be the best. It was, in fact, not able to recover my deleted files, probably because I'd overwritten them. But it's certainly worth a try. It's not horribly expensive, and I think it does do a good job of this kind of undelete. Normally, you know, if you have a problem with your hard drive, I recommend SpinWrite. But in this case, it's not really a problem with the hard drive. It is the drive's fine. It's just the data has been messed up. So you need something like Active Undelete. It's $40.
Is there a way to rebuild the file allocation table?
Yeah, that's essentially what this will do.
Okay.
You can't do it by hand. What happens is the file allocation table, which is the table of contents for what's on the drive, gets erased, gets zeroed out, and then essentially all of the data area is released, but it's not overwritten. And that's why we always say, if you're going to give away a computer or sell a hard drive, make sure you overwrite the data, because the data is still there. So all of your files are still there. The computer doesn't know it, though, because it looks at the file allocation table and says, there's nothing here. It's all available. So whatever you do, don't install these undelete programs onto the same drive or anything. You know, in fact, if you really want to be safe, I don't think you need to do this, but if you really want to be safe, you make a ghost of the drive before you do anything so that you have a copy of it, just in case something you do.
I'll make sure I do that.
If you have Ghost lying around or some sort of disk imaging program lying around, I would do that. That's certainly what forensic experts do. They want a complete and exact copy of the drive, just in case what you do doesn't work.
We have a copy of Ghost.
Good. Yeah, ghost the drive. Don't install anything on the drive. Don't modify the drive in any way. Just make a ghost first, and then try these programs. Active undelete, $40, probably worth it for your peace of mind. And then next time say, hubby, you do it. I do not do formatting. Oh, you know, that's almost a setup. Honey, would you erase the hard drive for me? That's a setup. Don't you think he kind of knew? He'd get some points. He'd say, what do you think the chances are she's going to do it wrong? And then I can gloat. Ha, 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 ha. Honey, just, you know, press any key. It's okay. Don't, just do it quickly. Don't look at it too closely. Kathy, Claremont, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, this is Kathy.
Welcome.
And I wanted to talk to you about an iMac with an Intel processor that I bought about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have dial-up, I bought that little external modem that they sell to go with it.
The USB modem, yeah.
Right. And I brought it all home and set it up. And for about the first five dial-ups, over about 2 days, it worked great. And then I got a fatal error when I tried to dial up.
Mm.
And I had to force close it down with the power button.
Okay.
So I talked to some tech guys, and I finally returned it to the place that I bought it, because they're a service center. They gave me a new computer, but the same little modem. Took it home, and this time I got a fatal error right away.
Yeah. I think the modem itself is damaged.
Well, they traded it out and gave me a new modem. So now I've had two modems and two computers and still the same problem.
Yeah. Apparently, this is very common. I'm just looking at troubleshooting problems with these modems, and it is not at all uncommon. USB devices, because they draw power, can sometimes cause problems, short circuits and so forth. Does a computer boot fine when the modem's not plugged in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's good then.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I returned the whole thing, and I'm trying at a different location. I'm going to kind of buy the same thing, but I wanted to find out what you knew about these modems, and maybe I am going to just be forced to a DSL.
Or not use the Apple USB modem. You know, there are other modems you can use.
Ah, that was my other question. Yeah. There are some others that might be better?
Well, I mean, the truth is they're probably exactly the same equipment. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the Apple just packages it their way.
Okay.
It's not the iMac. It is the modem. It's probably that modem was bad. I'm just looking at all of these people having miserable problems with this Apple USB modem. Now, it may be the modem is not well designed. It may also be that it doesn't work well with Apple's software. Maybe that Apple's software is not doing very well. But I tell you, boy, the reviews in this thing, and I'm looking at the reviews in the Apple store.
Oh my god!
They are. I've never seen such negative reviews. So clearly, this is not the best hardware ever designed.
Another question I have is, I don't mind a $50 part failing, but is this now in the process of failing, is it going to now wreck my computer?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's much more likely that the modem itself is bad, or that the problem is, it's such a minority that use dial-up that I think people are no longer supporting it very well.
Yeah, and maybe what kind of dinosaurs?
Yeah, maybe the OS X doesn't do a very good job of supporting it. I mean, all I can say is I'm seeing lots of people with problems with this modem.
Okay.
So I'm going to look through Mac Fix It, and I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. Just keep listening.
Okay.
And I will give you some information from Mac Fix It about if there is any solution for this modem. Otherwise, maybe we can find you a better USB modem. There are lots of companies that make USB modems.
Okay.
And I think, you know, it'd probably be a good idea just to get somebody else's. It may be just Apple just made a crappy one.
Okay.
All right. But I'll keep listening. I'll come up with something for you. 1149, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
The Jesus Christ Show, tomorrow morning, 6 to 9 a.m., KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
1156 on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. You know, I'm thinking, looking at all the comments about the Apple USB modem, it's probably just a piece of junk and probably not worth sticking with. The good news is there's a lot of companies make USB modems. In fact, I would say most of the modems you'll see at a computer store these days are USB now, since very few PCs still have serial ports. And USB configure so much easier and so forth. So I would guess the best thing to do, one of the negatives I would say to the Apple modem is it's self-powered. It's powered by the USB bus, and that's always tricky. I would look for a USB modem from US Robotics, Zoom. There are lots of companies that make these that has its separate power supply, its own separate power supply. So it's a standalone modem. Creative makes one. A lot of companies make them. But it plugs into the wall. Because I think that's going to give you better results than having the power come off the USB bus. I'm willing to bet that's where the issue is. Brian, Watsonville, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Brian.
Great to speak with you, Leo.
Great to talk
to you. I've been a podcast listener of yours for a long time. Your podcasts are fantastic.
Well, I got 7 now. Just launched another one this week. I can't stop. They're like candy.
it's great stuff. You know, as soon as podcasting came out, the first thing I did was sign up for the Phil Hendry Show. And the second thing I did is, that Leo Laporte guy I used to hear on KGO now and then. I got to find him.
Oh, that's neat. Oh, yeah, because you're in Watsonville. You're not within our reach. That's right.
No,
yeah.
I've never tuned into KFI in my life, but I listen to its programming almost every day. That's the amazing world of podcasting.
Oh, I tell you, it's global now too. I mean, there are people all over the world listening to the show, which is great.
Yeah, it's gonna shake things up. You know, KGO, which is supposed to be the flagship station of the Silicon Valley, they still don't have it. But anyway,
it's not their fault. They've invited me back many times, and I say I like KFI. I'm not coming back.
Yeah, no, why would you? KFI is a great station.
Oh, it's a wonderful station. Yeah.
What I want to talk to you about is I'm about to get a new computer, a new house with a couple of new computers, and I'm very interested in this idea of having dual screens on a window machine.
Yes.
What I want to be able to do is, I hope my clients aren't listening. I'm an attorney, but I want to be able to do all my legal work on one screen and have Microsoft Flight Simulator running on the other screen.
Well, those long flights, you got to have something to do. You can do a little work.
Exactly.
It's going to be a little tough running a heavy-duty program like Flight Sim at the same time as you run other stuff. But it's certainly doable, and most, believe it or not, this is such a common request that most of the new computers now, most of the new video cards do support dual screens. So you're just looking for, what I would suggest looking for is something with they call it a dual head video card. That means it has two connectors on it. You can connect two screens. I would get identical screens, put them, LCD screens side by side, give you a real, I'm sitting in front of a dual system right now, although the way I have it set up, I can have it be dual from one computer or separate computers. So I have a Windows and a Mac screen in front of me right now. And I'll tell you, it's very, very convenient to have a setup like that. But the good news is it is pretty easily done. Look for dual head video cards. NVIDIA makes them. ATI makes them. Those are the two best video card companies. We talked last week about Matrox, which has made a specialty out of dual head cards, but they're not high end enough for Flight Sim. So don't get those. Stick with NVIDIA or Matrox. The real issue is you're going to need probably a dual processor computer. If you don't have a dual processor or a Core Duo-based computer, I would get one, or an X2, an AMD X2, because you're doing two heavy-duty things at the same time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1159. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
April 8, 2006.
Southland weather from KFI, partly cloudy skies today, highs in the 60s at the beaches, mid-60s in metro LA and Orange counties, low 70s in the valleys, partly cloudy tonight, lows 40s and 50s. 66 right now in Los Alamitos, 65 in Santa Ana, 60 in Burbank, and 64 in Marina Del Rey. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 12:06. I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, J-Ro. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1534. I'd love to have your opinions on these bill pay services. I've been using Paytrust for a long time, and I like it, although it's gone through two sales of ownership. It was originally paymybills.com, then Paytrust bought them, and then Intuit bought them. Now, Intuit has its own bill-paying service, which is not related. I even asked Paytrust, are you going to move into the, you know, I'd like to work with my Quicken. They said, no, we have no plans to do that. Oh, great, thanks. And, of course, my bank, as many banks do, offer bill-pay services. My bank, at least, and I don't know if any other banks do this, they'll pay your, you know, you can set up automatic pay and so forth, but you still get the bill and you still have to look at it and figure out what the amount is and all this. The thing I like about Paytrust is all my bills are sent to somewhere in South Dakota. Now, I don't know, but I have heard that places like this use prison labor to do the data entry. So I don't know who's doing the data entry, but all of the bills go there. They scan them, they enter in the amount, and then I have rules that I can set up to automatically pay my bills. And I just find it fantastic because I'm one of those people. I forget to pay the bills. And it's really bad when the power goes out. And you call them, they say, well, you haven't paid your bill in 3 months. And I go, oh, yeah, it's under here. It's in this pile somewhere. So and that used to happen once in a while. And it hasn't happened ever since. You know, what I do is I say, look, when the Edison bill comes, you pay that. You pay that right away. You know, no matter what they want, you pay that. Same thing, you know, cell phone bills, insurance, you pay those right away. Mortgage. The other guys, you can say, well, I'll pay them when I feel like it. You can set up your own rules. Or you can have them pay just the minimum. So the credit card, I actually do that. I'll automatically have the credit card minimums paid, so I never am late. But then I can say, make it more this time around. I usually like to pay off my credit cards because the interest rate's so high. But if some days you can't, or sometimes you can't, or you forget, this way you're guaranteed you never miss a payment. And I like that. And I don't have to worry about it. And I don't get a pile of bills. And I don't have to say, where did I put those bills? Because I'm very disorganized. I don't know. Does your bank do that? What have you used a bill pay service? What's your favorite? What do you like? What do you dislike? I'd love to get some reviews. Speaking of reviews, Billboard, the music magazine, you know, the Billboard charts are the Bible of record sales and music radio. I mean, if you're number one with a bullet, where are you number one? You're number one on Billboard. That's where it counts, right? They've announced they're going to start publishing a new chart ranking ringtones. Ringtones. That's right. They're actually a certain kind of ringtones. They call them master ringtones. These are not the ringtones that are MIDI. These are or monophonic, you know, believe it or not, they've actually been doing that for a while. But these are the ringtones that are clips of real songs, actual songs. And that's the big growth area. You're hearing more and more of those where it's actually a cut from the song itself, not some, you know, MIDI version of it. This is a big business. I mean, Billboard estimates global ringtone sales last year of $4.4 billion. And most of that due to these new kind of master ringtones. Most phones will support them now. And most people want them. Instead of the cheesy, you know, doot, 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 doot. You can actually have the Bee Gees singing that. I'm not sure which is more annoying, to be honest with you. In fact, don't you find ringtones incredibly annoying? They're fun to play with. They're fun to have. And you see these guys in business suits, you know, these respectable guys or gals, professionals. And all of a sudden the phone rings and it's the Flight of the Valkyries. Dun, 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 or some silly, you know, Pokemon tune coming out of their phone. It just that ruins the image. I think there's a trend. I do think there's a little bit of a trend towards going back to plain old rings. On the other hand, you don't want to use the default ring of your phone, right? You know, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, that's the Nokia. When I hear that, I know this person can't figure out how to use their phone. either they're really cool and they care so little that they just leave it. Or more likely, they can't figure the thing out. That's my guess. They just can't figure it out. So nowadays your phone has many more choices and in most phones now will play all sorts of, you know, fancy, oddball things. I put a bunch of Art Blakey songs. These are the master ringtones. I put a bunch of Art Blakey songs on there, and that I thought that was great. So share your ringtones with us. That would be another thing we could do. That'd be kind of fun. Let me see if I can find find my Art Blakey song. I'll find it somewhere. It's in here somewhere. $4.4 billion. In the U.S., $600 million in sales. Up from half a billion last year. And when they use these master tones, the recording company makes money. The artist, if they've got a good deal, makes money. So that's even, you know, that's even better. Record companies really like that. That's become actually a very big business. What they hate is when you do it yourself, though. They really want you to buy them for $1.99. That's how they get to $500 million a year. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Greg is in Tujunga. Hello, Greg. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo and Boy Bank. How are you?
I'm great. What can I do for you today?
I have, you go into the MS setup.
Mm-hmm.
All those startup items. What is the minimum I can use to start this thing up? Because I'm starting up things. I have no idea. I'll probably be talking to Venus or something.
Yeah,
I don't
it's a
wanna...
very good idea to take a look at that. Yeah.
Well, I take a look at it. I want to know what I can get rid of.
What do I get rid of?
Yeah.
What he's talking about is the Microsoft System Configuration Utility, which you can get to in your menu if you click enough times. You know, it's like 30 layers deep in the start menu. Or you could just click Start, Run, and enter MSCONFIG, MS Config, and that'll open the System Configuration Utility. And you're looking at the things that start up, and there's a bunch of stuff. And by the way, you know, sometimes spyware will show up there, but sometimes it won't. Sometimes viruses will show up there, sometimes it won't. But most of the time, this is stuff put there by programs you've installed. You know, Norton and Quicken and Photoshop. Everybody puts something in there. And to be honest with you, I really think, Greg, they just do. It's an ad. They put it there not because they need it in any way, shape, or form, but it's just because it reminds you you've got the program. It's in your little system tray. Oh yeah, I see that icon. It's really advertising. Very rarely do you need that stuff. The iTunes.
I'd rather not have it at all.
Uncheck it all. Press
everything?
That button. Yeah, press that button that says disable all. Very rarely will that cause any problems. It's certainly unlike, you know, modifying your registry or turning services off. Turning off these items in the startup tab very rarely impacts anything. It certainly won't keep you from booting. It certainly won't give you real problems. The worst that'll happen is you'll lose some functionality that you are used to or like, and then in which case you turn that one back on. The nice thing about this is they don't get uninstalled. They're still there. You just check that box and they're back on. Now, a couple of things you may not want to turn off are your antivirus scanner, things like that. If there's security programs in there that you rely on, you may want to leave those on. But a lot of this stuff is completely useless. And it'll never get you in trouble turning it all off.
Now, let me ask you something. Now, the things that are necessary for certain programs will turn on when you turn on that program.
Right? Yeah, well, I'll give you an example. This is a very common. Adobe does this with its Acrobat Reader. QuickTime does it with a QuickTime Player. Apple's iTunes does it. They put a little icon in the thing. They say it launches the program faster. But you know what? Our computers are so fast now, I don't notice a difference.
Slow. I want to get rid of this stuff.
Yeah, well, that's another reason to do it. Because they do. They just take up memory and cycles, and there's no reason. I think you turn it off and see if your program starts any slower. I bet you it doesn't. I don't think you need it, and I think in most cases, you're absolutely right. Any service that it needs, it'll start when that program runs. The only time you need it is if there is something running in the background that you want, like an antivirus, a system scheduler, that sort of thing. But what I would recommend is just turn it all off.
I will.
And see what happens.
And I'll take great joy, and I'll be dancing in the street.
It's gone. It's gone. I'm free at last. No, I completely know what you mean. I don't know of anything in there that will keep your system from booting or really screw you up. The only, you know, the risk is if you turn off a firewall or a virus program, you might be a little less secure. But turn that, leave that one on. But everything else, who needs it?
I don't either.
I think it's just I truly think it's a play for disk space for your eyeballs so that they get a little You know, and then maybe there's some minor advantage because you can right click the thing and then, you know, use the menu there. But I agree with you. I think they slow things down. And really, a lot of these things are not just little stubs. They actually are big old programs that take up a lot of space and a lot of memory. So, turn them off. Turn them off. And if you need it, you'll know because something won't work right or whatever. You can tune it from there. But it's not going to make such a difference that you can't boot or anything like that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1217.
Matt Drudge.
The rally over the weekend was the largest in the city's history. Think about that. Everything we've been through in this country, all the political movements, this is the largest rally protest in the history of Los Angeles.
Matt Drudge, tomorrow 7 to 10 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
If you are suffering with dial-up, oh my goodness, you have my deepest sympathy. Who was that caller we had a little while ago? She was on dial-up still. I just feel your pain. I'll feel your pain. You don't have to be on dial-up. Maybe you're thinking, oh, well, you know, it's fast, high-speed internet. That's for rich folks. I can't afford that. Well, heck, can you afford $12.95 a month? I think you can. $12.95 a month. That's all it costs to get high-speed internet from DSL Extreme. In fact, that's the guaranteed lowest price in the country. Less than half what people are paying AOL for dial-up. But it's not. It's high-speed internet from the same internet service provider I use. These guys are great. And it's not some teaser rate for 3 months. This is guaranteed for a year. There's no setup fee. The modem is free. You get 24-hour free local tech support. DSL Extreme guarantees that $12.95 is the lowest price in the country from DSL. For DSL. Certain restrictions apply, so call 866-2-GET-NET right now. 866-2-GETNET. You can also visit them online at dslextreme.com. High-speed internet for only $12.95 a month. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme.
What do you get when you mix more stimulating talk radio to your weekends? Duh. More stimulating weekends.
1224 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We've got calls from all over the world, including Alaska. Hello, Doug. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, Leo.
How are you today?
Okay, I haven't had any breakfast, and I'm a little jittery from making too strong coffee.
I hate it when that happens. You better get something on your stomach, son. You're going to get sick.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of tethered to the wall by my laptop with a dead battery and my cell phone charger.
I hate that when that happens. Oh, man, you're stuck. This is a modern conundrum. Too much coffee, too little food, dead laptop battery, dead cell phone battery. What are you going to do?
Not much. Yeah. Anyway, on to the reason for my call.
Yes.
I think I'll just point out a couple little things. A long time ago, someone called in with hardware that just would not completely install.
Yeah.
I had a ghost. I work for a nonprofit, and I had it partially installed and would not disappear.
Yes.
Until I went through and took it out of the registry.
Oh, yeah. You know, what you're talking about is this Windows keeps...
I don't remember where I found it, but...
Right. Windows keeps trying...
I took it out of the registry. It didn't keep showing up anymore.
Yeah, Windows keeps trying. Okay. Go ahead. Yes, what else?
Now, on to the rest... Now on to the bulk of my call.
Okay.
Since I work at a nonprofit and I have a couple tips for people donating e-waste.
Ah.
I'm going to cut... I'll concentrate on computers because I do electronics, but this will cover most things. With computers, if you have the software, manuals, cables, etc., if you can donate those along with the computer, that helps us out quite a bit. If you can take the time to wipe and re-image the hard drive, oh, man, does that simplify things to the nth degree?
And when you say re-image, you're talking about running the system recovery disks so you get back to the way it was when it came.
Yeah, like a Dell machine or something, wipe the, run the image software so that...
From a licensing perspective and from a privacy perspective, it's a very good idea. You'll erase all your personal data And you won't leave any programs on there that you're not supposed to be giving away. You're actually, you know, that's a really the best advice is save the materials if you can, the packing materials that the computer came with, especially, though, those manuals and disks. And then when it's time to get rid of the computer, you can essentially give it to the nonprofit in the same way that you got it, just with a little more wear on it. And that really is the nicest thing to do. I completely agree with you. Now, let's see if we get Steve on the line from Ontario, because go get some milk, Doug, or something to eat. Steve, calling all the way from Canada. Hello, welcome to KFI.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not too bad. I've got a new Mac Mini that I've got in my living room, using it as a media center. Which
How's that working for
great.
You?
Great.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Fantastic. Now, I've also got all kinds of old 8mm camcorder videotapes.
Yes.
And I'd like to get those into iMovie.
Yes.
Now, since they're analog, what's the best way to do that?
You know, Sony made kind of a bridge hardware device, and I think they still sell it, that was a digital Hi8. And it would play the old 8mm tapes, the Hi8 tapes, and you could record digitally on it. And I believe it had a FireWire output. So that might be one way to do it. Otherwise, what you're going to... You still have the camcorder that you made those with?
Yep.
Yeah. Otherwise, what you're going to have to do is, and this is, you know, if you had a VHS tape, you'd have the same issue, is you've got to get a analog to digital converter.
Right. Now, I've seen a bunch of them that are USB-based, but I
don't recommend those.
Something FireWire-based.
You're exactly right. I don't recommend USB because it's not fast enough to do this. So what they have to do is compress the heck out of the thing. You know, that big fat thing at the end that you plug it into, that's compressing it before it pushes it down the USB pipe. FireWire gives you much, much better results. There are a couple of companies that make them for Macintosh. One of my favorites is Formac, F-O-R-M-A-C, easy to remember. They make a Porsche-designed little breakout box that has FireWire out and all the analog cables coming in, and does a great job of conversion. It's a little pricey, but if you want to do it right, I think the Formac is probably a very good choice for you.
Okay.
There are some other not Mac-specific solutions, but I think you're better off going with a company that makes stuff for Mac.
Right. Now, that Sony camcorder you mentioned, the one that's kind of the hybrid, when playing analog tapes, does it actually give you digital out through the FireWire?
You know, that's a good question. That's a good question. I always assumed it did, but come to think of it, it may not.
Because I asked at a Sony store and couldn't really get a straight answer.
Yeah. You know, now I'm trying to think. The reason I would think it might is because there are newer camcorders that have basically A to D pass-through. That's another way to go, by the way. If you're going to buy a new camcorder, if you want to get a DV camcorder, get one with analog pass-through. Then you plug in the analog output of your 8mm camcorder into the new camcorder. And it outputs, that one does output FireWire. Sometimes you have to record to a tape. Sometimes it'll output it directly. Let me do some research and see if the Sony will do that. And, you know, I always assumed it would, but come to think of it, it might not. And also put a link in the show notes to the Formac, because the Studio DV from Formac is great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1230. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
They've taken Southern California by storm. Now they're invading your weekend.
Go! John and Ken, Saturdays starting at 3.
Hey Leo, this is Bob from Northridge. I know you talk about GarageBand for Mac a lot, but I was wondering if you could recommend some podcast editing software for Windows. Thank you very much.
I sure can. In fact, believe it or not, I know some people would say, you use Windows? Yes, I do. In fact, when I edit my podcasts, I use Adobe Audition, which is kind of the king of Windows editing programs. In fact, every radio station I know has for years been using either Audition or its predecessor, Cool Edit Pro. Adobe bought Cool Edit Pro and they renamed it Audition. It's just the easiest way to edit. It has a lot of GarageBand-like capabilities. It doesn't do some of the things GarageBand does, like the automated ducking, and which means bringing music down below, as our wonderful studio engineers here do. It doesn't have the built-in enhanced podcast creation tool, which is a wonderful feature of GarageBand, but of course requires that you put out your podcast in a format that only iPods can read. So I don't do it. If you want a free program, Windows, Mac, or Linux, Audacity is fantastic. audacity.sourceforge.net. It's a basic, powerful editor, and it's absolutely free. You know, you're going to spend $200 on Adobe Audition, and most podcasters aren't making any money, so that's probably a little more than you'd want to spend. So I do recommend starting with Audacity. I think you can download a trial of Adobe Audition. You know, they always do this. I was using Audition. I was using Cool Edit Pro for years, and then Audition, and Audition 1.5, and I just felt like Audition 1.5 was the best program ever. And then Adobe upgraded it to 2.0. And I was all excited. I thought, oh, there's got to be some great new features. No, in fact, there really weren't any great new features. And in fact, mostly what they just did is messed up all the stuff I liked, moved things around, made it a little bit harder. Plus, I've had some technical issues with it. So I've gone back to the original 1.5. So if you can find on eBay or, you know, in closeouts, if you can find the Adobe Audition 1.5 for less, I would get that one. I think it's really, that's still the nicest audio editor out there. There will be more and more things like Cast Blaster. That's the standalone program from the folks at, it's Adam Curry's company. What do they call themselves? I forgot now. Pod Show. Cast Blaster is a standalone program. It's in very early beta, but you can try it. That records, edits, posts, creates the feed for it, does the whole thing, soup to nuts, for podcasting. And there are a number of programs out like that now to do that. Cast Blaster has not been moving forward as much as I had hoped. I mean, here we are a year after it was announced, and it's still in kind of very early rough beta form. So I don't know if it's going anywhere. But it's something you could try. And there are other programs out there like Cast Blaster that are all-in-one podcast solutions. But frankly, I just use something like Audacity. Record it, edit it, save it as an MP3, and upload it. That's pretty much all you have to do. That's podcasting's simple. Don't make it more complicated than it is. Or cost more. Dennis Torrance, Leo Laporte, KFI, AM 640. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Dennis.
Yeah, hey, I have a question regarding Microsoft Outlook.
Yes.
And I have it on one computer, and I have a big lot of emails there. I got a new computer, wanted to transfer that information over there.
Very simple. There's one file called outlook.pst that's got everything in it. Now, the trick is to find the right outlook.pst, and there are a couple of ways to do that. Within Outlook, you can get the properties of your personal folder and tell you where that file is hidden. Or, truth is, if you just do a search for outlook.pst and take the biggest one, that's probably it. These files can be quite big, but that's all you have to do. Just move that one file. It has everything. Your email's in it, your calendar, your address book, everything.
Well, I can't get it into the new Outlook program. That's my challenge.
So you've already moved outlook.pst over.
Yeah, I copied it to a CD,
okay.
Put it on the desktop of the new computer. I don't know how to import it into the...
You just open it. So you open Outlook, and under File, Open. And you can open the new one. And then what you want to do is make that the default file for receiving new mail. And you do that in the Accounts setup.
Can I put that in the same file as the existing one on the new computer?
You could. That's the other way. You know, you could kind of trick it. Just open Outlook. It'll create an Outlook.pst folder. It'll be in your Documents and Settings folder, hidden away. You find that file. Replace it with a new one, and that'll work too. Close Outlook before you do that. But the truth is, it's not. You're making it more complicated than it is. Just open it. It's a document file. So if you open it, Outlook will see it. All the data will be there. But then what you want to do is tell it, look, this is my default file. So you tell Outlook, from now on, when you get new mail, it goes in here, and you do that in the Accounts setup. That's the only thing that Microsoft made a little tricky is finding that little setting. And they've moved it around in different versions of Outlook. But as I remember, in the most recent Outlook 2003, it's in the Accounts settings. You choose which Outlook, which personal folder you're going to store your mail in. And now it becomes your default one, and that's the one that'll open. In fact, you can close all the others. Although Outlook has a bad habit of reopening them. But the good news is you just ignore it. John, Los Angeles, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, how you doing?
I've got a question about ringtones. You got me thinking about ringtones.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, is it possible for me to make my own ringtones?
It is. It depends on the phone. So,
right.
So unfortunately, a lot of carriers see ringtones as a big profit center for them, and they really lock the phone down. They really make it hard to do. Some carriers, it's very easy to do. If you can, you know, if you can get a cable from your computer to your phone, chances are pretty sure that you'll just be able to copy an MP3 or WAV file over. But it really depends on the phone. So you have to first find out, what are my capabilities? Can I play WAV files or MP3 files, or am I stuck playing MIDI files? So figure out what capabilities you have. On most newer phones, they will play MP3s or WAVs. So you'll take a music file on your computer, you'll edit it. You want to make it about 20-30 seconds. Best if you edit it like wallpaper so that it kind of loops around nicely. But, you know, it doesn't matter. Just you have fun with it. And then figure out how to get it to the phone. Now, if you don't have a cable or you can't get a cable for your phone, sometimes you can email it to yourself.
All right.
And then open the email attachment and play it. And now, again, it depends on how nasty the carrier is. Some carriers won't let you then move it to a folder where it can be your ringtone. Some will. Some won't let you play it. Some will. And so you just have to play with it. For instance, and it varies from carrier to carrier. For instance, in Canada, if you have a Sidekick 2 and you have Rogers as your carrier, you can email yourself a ringtone and an MP3, and it becomes your ringtone. In the United States with T-Mobile, you can't. Same exact phone hardware, but the carrier blocks it. And really, phone manufacturers let the carriers do that. The carriers insist on it. This is a way for them to make money. They don't want you to be. They want you to pay $1.99.
Right.
But in most cases, you can. There are. If you go to the computer store, you'll see software for making ringtones. Sometimes that helps. I don't think you need to buy anything. What I would recommend doing is doing a Google search for your phone model and your carrier and ringtones. Now, you're going to get a lot of pages that want to sell your ringtones, but you were looking for some hacker somewhere who's figured out the particular arcane steps for your phone. What kind of phone do you have?
Well, my phone that I'm using right now is a couple years old. I'm ready to get a new one.
Ah. So that's a case where you might want to inquire before you buy a phone, which ones. In general, the smartphones can, because they're smartphones, right? They have an operating system and stuff. But on the other hand, you know, most of the Symbian, phones can do that also. You just really should probably do a search before. Are you going to stick with your existing carrier?
Probably.
Who's that?
Which is Verizon.
Yeah, Verizon's kind of notorious for locking their phones down.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah. I'm Verizon also, and I like Verizon. But they do tend to lock their phones down.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it would be nice to... I find those ringtones that are music playing, they sound like a overdriven transistor radio.
It's annoying, yeah.
It's just very annoying. And just, I'd like to be able to make something just very subtle, but unique.
Yeah, and you can, actually. I mean, you really can. And that's exactly what I would say. You know, pick wisely of what you choose. But, you totally can. I'm going to put a make-your-own ringtone guide for some Verizon, it works with some of the Verizon phones, the LG phones, I think, on the show notes. And this guy actually uses Audacity, the program I was talking about. Tells you exactly what to save it in, what format to save it in, and then describes how to move it over. And this is the trick, how to move it over to your phone.
Right.
He uses, and I've used this on the Verizon phones, a program called BitPim, BitPim. And I was able, in fact, with an LG 8100, I was able to use BitPim to move data over to the phone, even though Verizon doesn't want you to move data over to the phone and then move ringtones over as well. So I'll put a link to all of the above in the show notes. The good news is these are all free programs. I don't really recommend going out and buying one unless it's, you know, unless it's the only way to do it. Okay?
Thank you, Leo.
I appreciate it. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1248.
It's Handel's world. He just lets us live here. Monday morning, 5 to 9.
KFI AM 640.
Yeah. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. 1-800-520-1KFI is the number. The show notes are online. Just go to KFIAM640.com and click my name on the left, Leo Laporte. That'll take you to the website for the show notes, which is leo.am. This is show 237. Just click Saturday's show. It'll take you right there. And there's other links you might want to check out, including our great chat room. I'm in there and a lot of other wonderful people, about 112 of us, talking about stuff. There's also a link to a tips section, a frequently asked questions. There's a glossary, profiles of our listeners, which you could add to if you'd like. And all of our sponsors, too. We're grateful to all of them. Plus a little camera, and you can watch me work. Not that it's a pretty picture, but if you... There are apparently a handful of people who like to do that. And what else? Oh, and the show notes, of course, themselves, which you can add to by clicking on the page, going to the right page, and then right at the bottom there's a comments box. You can just type in your own comments. In fact, people do that, which is great. JB says he makes his own ringtones for his Verizon Motorola E815. Of course, you got to make them small. He says he emails them to the phone with Gmail. He says, don't use Verizon's sham media website, PixPlace. Or if you have a cable, you can do it. But if you email them, they have to be fairly small. Fab recommended, we were talking about programs for editing podcasts. He said, for $70, get Sonic Foundry 7, which is inexpensive. He says, it's fast, user-friendly, and works great. I think Sony owns that now. Sonic Foundry 7, they bought that company. SoundForge? Or I think he's probably thinking of SoundForge. Sonic Foundry is the name of the company. I'll have to... I'm not sure. But I would bet that he's talking about SoundForge. Let's see. Also, Gainer for Steve, who wanted to convert his 8mm tapes to digital. Gainer says he or she has two Sony camcorders that do well... as pass-through, converting the analog to digital. They have USB and FireWire outputs. She recommends the TRV-460 or 480. Sony TRV-460 or 480 for converting those 8mm. And somebody asked about the bill pay that I recommended. The one I use and the one I still use and like and pay, I think, $10 a month for is PayTrust, PayTrust.com. But I'm asking people to share their experiences. I'd like to. There aren't that many choices. I'm interested in what Intuit has done. They bought PayTrust and they own them, but they have their own service. And I'd love it if it would integrate with Quicken. So after many years with PayTrust, I'm thinking maybe of moving to Quicken. Or is the bank's system better? Most banks offer bill pay now. But to me, the thing I'm looking for, and I would suggest you would look for, is that the company gets the bills. You have the bills mailed directly to the company. Yeah, it's a little tricky. I mean, the nice thing about PayTrust is you just check a box and they send a letter to the biller, and the biller in most cases will automatically send it to PayTrust. Here's the funny thing. You'd think by now most bills would be electronic, most payments would be electronic. And much of the time, these bill pay services, even if you go through a bank, the bank prints out a bill, somebody sticks it in an envelope, licks the flap, puts a stamp on it, and pops it in the mail. We are not as modern as we think. On the other hand, I do love these bill pay services, and I would not hesitate recommending PayTrust. They've been through some ups and downs, but now that they're owned by Intuit, I think they're probably here to stay. 1259 News is next. More of your calls to 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
2006. Partly cloudy tonight, lows 40s and 50s. Slight chance of rain by Sunday night. 66 right now in Irvine. It's 62 in Newport Beach, 65 in Santa Monica, and 63 in Glendale. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jess. 106, time for me, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. On KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1KFI. The Mac Gathering is coming. We talked about the Mac Gathering with Deb Shadovitz, who puts it together last year. In fact, I did a fun thing. I'm hoping I can do it again this year. I visited him by iChat. If you are a Mac user, if you're into SoHo technology, small office, home office technology, you want to check out the Mac Gathering. Tickets are on sale now. It's coming up in May, next month, May 19th through 20th. It's nice. It's a small expo. It's a Macintosh Computer Expo for Southern California. It's going to be at Beverly Garland's Holiday Inn once again in Hollywood, North Hollywood. For hotel information, if you want to come and stay the night, 1-800-BEVERLY. For more information about the Mac Gathering, visit macgathering.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. Deb does a great job, and it's a lot of fun. Sinbad will do did the keynote last year. I think he's doing it again, which is a lot of fun. Of course, the great comedian and Mac fanatic. So all weekend long, May 19th through the 20th, just wanted to remind you the Mac Gathering is coming. Bill, Pasadena, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Bill. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Leo. I love your show.
Thanks. Thanks for holding on.
And yeah, it's a great show. You're doing a great service. And I also want to personally thank you for answering a letter that I wrote to you about a week or so ago regarding GoToMyPC, some questions that I had, and you responded, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you're a Mac user, and you were saying, why doesn't work on the Mac, and they never say so? And, you know, it's true. They probably should say so. But
maybe on the homepage it should have, yeah.
Yeah, in the real world, you know, we Mac users have to realize that we're a small percentage, and in general, when people talk about software, and I do it too, and I probably should know better, we're unless we specifically say Mac software, we're talking about Windows software, because that's about, you know, that's 90% of the market. So
absolutely.
Unfortunately, but you know what, Bill?
Oh, well.
Just think of it this way. You're in a small, elite group.
Yeah, I mean, I can use Timbuktu and everything. I just wanted to get away from the whole software, you know,
I thought
web-based. A web base would be kind of cool. But anyway.
I wish there were something like GoToMyPC for the Mac, because there isn't.
Yeah, and yeah. I think they say they're working on it. So
are they good?
Time, I sure will be there.
Yeah, their heritage is as a Windows company. I mean, Citrix was a Windows company. In fact, Ed Iacobucci, who founded it, was on the. We worked at IBM when IBM was working with Microsoft developing OS 2 and NT. In fact, the scuttlebutt was that IBM wrote much of NT and Microsoft wrote much of OS 2, and Ed Iacobucci was one of the architects, chief architect in many ways of Windows NT. So when he went out and started Citrix, he really knew how Windows worked, and still they have a huge lead over everybody else. But that's why they're very Windows centric. All right,
gotcha.
Enough of that. What can I do
okay.
for you?
Well, here's my question. Obviously, I'm a Mac guy, and I have a laptop, a G4, and I've got the Airport Extreme base station router.
Right.
I also bought, at the same time, the Airport Express, because I wanted to hook that up to my stereo so I can have my iTunes go right to that, and I did that, and it works great.
Yeah, it's a nice idea, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. I mean, you can do podcasts or internet radio or pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. Everything on your iTunes goes right to your stereo.
You know, I have a similar setup. I have an Airport Extreme downstairs, and to extend connectivity to the upstairs, I put an Airport Express upstairs. And that's where the kids live on the second floor. And I, you know, we've had trouble getting the kids up for school, so I got you know where I'm going here.
Yeah.
I have one of those Altec Lansing's IM7 boom boxes for an iPod. They're loud, and I put it up there, and I connected the cable from the Airport Express to the Altec Lansing. I leave it on, and in the morning, I play the music from downstairs. I put it on I'll open up iTunes, and I play it really loud.
I love it.
Yeah, and I even recorded some announcements. Get up! It's great.
Here's where my problem starts, though, is after a few months of having everything work great, I had realized that on my Airport Extreme on the base station, I didn't have LEP or WPA enabled. My whole system was open. So I'm like, oh, wow. So I went in there and I set up WPA, and it wouldn't recognize the Airport Express anymore.
Right.
So I thought, oh, okay, what's the problem? So I went to Apple's website, and they said, yeah, you got to put in the Express ID up in the ACL. They call it the access control list.
Oh, so man. Now, you know what? There's an easier way.
I did that, and it still didn't work.
Yeah, no,
so I thought, well, maybe it's WPA, and then I put in WEP.
No. I'm doing what you're doing. I'm doing what you're doing. And
if you've got an idea or any of your listeners,
I can tell you.
I'd love to get it back online, because it only works when I disable all my security.
Yeah, no. It's totally doable. But it is. What happened is you changed horses in the middle of the stream. And any time you turn on encryption, Windows or Mac, in Wi-Fi, all of a sudden, you're breaking everything else because it can't get online. Now, you had it set up with something called WDS, and they even warn you when they turn on the WPA, oh, you're going to have to reconfigure your WDS devices. This is going to mess everything up. What I ended up having to do, and I think this is probably the easiest way to do it, is reset everything and start from scratch. So, you know, there's a little reset button on the Airport Extreme, Airport Express, I should say. Start it over again. Press it and hold it. There's instructions to how to reset that thing. In other words, you're clearing out all the settings. In fact, it'll even go back to its generic name, you know, Apple 9F43772 or whatever it is. Then and take it offline. Set up WPA. Get it working with your Airport Extreme, your base station. Now that's all working. All the laptops are working. Everything's working. Now you want to turn on WDS. And this is really basically going back to the way it, you know, as if it, you just came from the store and started turning on encryption at that point. Now you plug in your Airport Express and you run the airport setup utility and you set up WDS. You don't do it until then. So you want to reset your Express. Start from scratch with that thing. Unplug it. Set up your base station, have that all working, and then add the Express. It's the same, the exact same problem has happened to me, and I'm sure many others. It even happened with WEP. You know, I've got a base station, I turn on WEP, and all of a sudden I can't configure it because I can't get online with my laptop. And really the answer is to kind of go back to square one, as if you just brought it home from the store. Reset everything and start over. And then you'll be able to set it up. But what you can't do is, you know, continue to use the configuration you were using. As soon as you turn on encryption, everything stops working because it can't get onto it. Don't mess with the ACL. That's crazy. That's the access control list. That's crazy. That's crazy talk. Just reset the Airport Express. It'll all work just fine. It might take a couple of tries. I think it did for me. I was tearing my hair out for an evening. But you do want to turn it on. If you use wireless networking, turn on WPA. And if your hardware doesn't support it, check for a firmware upgrade, because it really is the one and only thing to do to secure a wireless network. Jules, Long Beach, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jules.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay. I'm good. I have a problem. I'm going to try to put this really simply.
Okay.
And this is tough for me. My DSL line is dialing 911.
What?
And Cindy's... My DSL line is dialing 911 and sending the police to my home.
That's not good.
Oh, well, you know, I don't like wasting their time. However, the problem is now escalating. And in the last 5 days, they've been here 3 times.
Oy.
Yes. And the officers have now told me that this is not an infrequent thing. This happens in this area. I live in Long Beach, and this is the East Side Division of the Long Beach Police Department.
Have you checked the phone? Have you called the phone company? Who provides your DSL?
Verizon provides all my services, my VoIP.
And you've called Verizon and said what's happening?
They say it can't happen.
Yeah, I don't think it can either. I think it's much more likely that you've got some device, some phone device. The router... The router and the DSL modem aren't really, I don't think, capable of dialing 911.
Okay.
Is there any other phone device on the network that could be dialing 911, or your computer could be dialing 911?
I have a fax that receives only, because I dial out of, you know, I send out over my VoIP, and that's... Again, it receives faxes only.
See, here's the thing. DSL happens in a completely different frequency on that line. It is,
right.
And it cannot send DTMF, the dial tone sounds, to dial 911. As far as I know, there's no way for it to do that. It's on a different channel, in effect. So,
are you working for Verizon?
No, I'm not. Is this what they said? This is what they said, Elsa?
Yeah, and police in my area say that this is a common occurrence.
Well, what they're saying is a common occurrence is they get spurious 911 calls, and I'd agree with that. But they don't know.
In response to a DSL problem, it's always a data line problem.
Well, that's somebody's possible diagnosis of it, but I don't know if the police or the home user is really capable of saying what's dialing 911. I find that, I'll tell you, I've never heard of this, and I don't think it's even doable. I don't think it's even possible. You do want to make sure, of course, that you have your DSL filters on the phone jacks, not on the DSL modem jack and all of that, but that really more is call quality. I cannot think of any way that a DSL modem could be dialing 911. It would be very far-fetched. The way you dial numbers nowadays, of course, is you generate these tones, these DTMF tones that go down the pipe. For a modem to just by chance be able to generate those particular tones down the line seems far-fetched. Now, I'm not going to say it's impossible. I wouldn't go that far. but I've never heard of it happening, and I'm not even really sure how it could happen. It seems highly unlikely. Seems much more likely, and of course, people have, this has been going on ever since 911, that there's some phone device, some kid in the house, or something's mashing 911 or something. Let me look, though. I mean, it is possible. It isn't. It's highly improbable. I'm not even sure I would say it's possible, but any electrical device plugged into the phone jack could, in theory, accidentally send that particular combination of tones. But one of the ways they've designed DTMF tones is to make that difficult. Each tone, if you listen to it, is actually two separate frequencies. So it's pretty difficult. It's hard to imagine this happening. Something else is dialing that 911. And it's something that is a phone equipment, which means it could a modem, a fax machine, a telephone, something designed to generate DTMF tones is a much more likely culprit. Anybody ever experienced anything like this? Let's help Jules. She doesn't want to see the police anymore. I mean, one way to test this is to disconnect the DSL modem and use your phone system normally. You'd be taking yourself offline. Use your phone system normally for a few days and see if it dials 911. I can't believe that a modem would do that. Anybody have any thoughts? Let's hear from some electrical engineers, some modem engineers, some phone company employees. How could a DSL modem be dialing 911? 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Wayne Resnick, tonight, 7 to 10.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 125. We've got a mystery. Jules says, how could my DSL modem be dialing 911? Some wag in the chat room said, well, maybe you haven't updated your antivirus in years, and it's asking for help. I don't know. Bill says he might have a suggestion. Bill, from Phelan, what do you think?
Yeah, hello, Leo. First of all, I want to start by thanking you for helping me with the Nod32 free trial program, the antivirus program that left a remnant in my machine.
You got that fixed?
I got it fixed. It was fine. These people were fantastic.
Oh, that's nice to know.
So this is my way of maybe giving something a little bit back. I had the same exact problem with my Verizon account out here in Phelan.
You're
that
kidding.
She's had. And it's dialed 911 a couple of times in a two-week period.
Yeah.
And they swore it was something wrong with my phone. I went out and I replaced the phone. And when we got to the end of the whole thing, because I kept calling these people, and it also came along with a intermittent dial tone problem.
Mm-hmm.
One time I'd have a dial tone, one time I wouldn't. People couldn't call me. They kept getting busy at the other end.
Yeah.
Phone company was driving me nuts, trying to make me feel insane like it was me. They said nothing at their end. Everything tested out fine. It's on your end on your phone. They finally found that there was a problem with their central office. There was some switching equipment in there that was starting to fail.
Yeah.
What she wants to look out for is eventually maybe having an open line. She'll pick up the phone. She'll have no dial tone.
Okay.
And people won't be able to reach her. As it fails, it got worse and worse until it finally got down to the DSL kept resyncing on the Broadmax box.
Right.
Kept re-blinking. And they wound up giving me phone credit and everything because they acknowledged it was a central office problem. And Verizon, they don't want to admit a mistake. You have to press these people. You have to press them. You have to go to their customer service, to their repair department, get all these people intertalking with each other.
Yeah.
And then finally somebody will find the problem.
Isn't it funny how the culture of Ma Bell has never really gone away? Remember the old Lily Tomlin bit? We're the phone company. We don't care. We don't have to.
Yes.
That same mentality, and they split them up, and it didn't make any difference.
It's still all exactly the same, Leo.
It
and
really
they get
is.
Really militant about it. I mean, they really want you to think it's you because you're the consumer and you know nothing. They know everything.
Well, I know Jules is still listening. The problem is, how do you, you know, what do you say? Well, I called a radio station, and Bill said he had that problem, and it was your fault. I don't know how you tell him that.
Really, she should tell them that, Leo, because that's exactly what it turned out to be.
Yeah.
It was
check
failing equipment
switch.
That they couldn't find.
Yeah, check your switch. And, it, you know, I could see that would make sense. It has to be some sort of phone equipment, although somebody in the chat room said, well, it doesn't have to be these DTMF tones. It could be clicks because, you know, the phone network still has to support these old dial phones. And so if it were emitting nine clicks followed by a single click followed by a single click, that would be interpreted as a 911. And I suppose that's possible. Certainly more likely than generating tones. But
yeah,
I think your scenario is the most likely, Bill. I do.
Yeah, as this was starting to fail, this was doing it more and more. And it finally dialed a woman in Nevada, too. It got really crazy, but the 911 seemed to be the worst offender, and they were sending the police out here, and the neighbors were starting to look and go, like, what's this guy doing? What's he into? What's going on here?
Well, and that, you know, maybe the police could be of support here if you explain to them that this has happened before, and here's what it was. You know, I would think that the police, they don't want to make these bogus emergency calls. That's not good.
Well, we have a woman in the neighborhood who had health issues, and they had to dial 911 occasionally, and we didn't want the boy who cried wolf scenario.
You're right. And, you know, the police don't have time to be chasing down these fake calls. So I think that maybe you could enlist their help as well, and certainly they'd have a little more clout if they call Verizon.
Yeah, I'm going to make the police reports now and let them know what's going on.
Yeah, that's good.
The whole thing.
Hey, Bill, I'm so glad you called.
Watch.
I'm glad you called. You know, you might have gotten to the bottom of this very interesting mystery.
Well, like I said, it's my way of giving something back, Leo, for all your help and support and the great show that you do. You do exactly what you promise you're going to do, and you got my problem solved really
Thanks,
quick.
Thanks, Bill. We're all in it together.
Thanks, Leo.
Have a great day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 129. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
Just because it's the weekend doesn't mean you got to get stupid.
More stimulating weekends.
Hey, Leo, this is Dean Pendergast from Sales Automation Services here in Anaheim. 2 weeks ago, I gave you a call in regards to an issue I was having with my cheap USB hub not producing enough power to run both my Radio Shark and my external 2.5 hard drive. After talking to you, after typing to some of your listeners via your wiki site, I decided to take this problem one step further and do some research to see if these cheap USB hubs are in fact not as good as the name brand hubs you see at the stores. So I went to the local store here, picked up a Belkin and also a D-Link hub, and came back to configure all three hubs identical, including having them self-powered. Well, lo and behold, all three hubs failed. None of them were able to run the Radio Shark and my external 2.5 hard drive at the same time. After fiddling around, it turns out the problem wasn't with the hubs. It's with the cable I was using between the hub and the external 2.5 hard drive.
A cable.
It wasn't thick enough and was not able to carry the power from the hub to the hard drive.
Who would have thought it? The cable. That's, you know, it's funny. Very frequently. Thank you, Dean, for that. I'm glad to get that update. You know, by the way, anytime you want to update us on a problem you had and you found a solution, I always like to hear those. You know, I file them away in the back of my brain for future. But also, it's, you know, it's just great to hear what the solution was. And it's something to keep in mind. We don't usually think of cables as being a problem. And I think more often than not, they are. They're frayed, they're worn, or as in Dean's case, they just weren't hefty enough to carry the power. You'd think the cable that came, you know, with your computer or that came with the USB hub or whatever would be sufficient, but not necessarily so. In fact, if you look at USB cables, some of them are quite thick and some of them are quite thin. I'm looking right now. My mouse cable is very skinny. My keyboard cable is considerably thicker. And the hub cable, the cable that came with the hub, is very thick. And that would make sense. The skinny cable would have a much higher impedance, maybe not able to carry enough power. So that I'm glad to get the follow-up. Thank you, Dean. Not many people would go out and buy three or four different hubs to figure it out. John Bellflower, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, John, how are you?
Hello, Leo. Thank you very much. I have a QuickTime problem. I've tried to load it several times, and I've loaded it in safe mode, and that didn't work. I've loaded it together. I get up to the start screen, you know, with their symbol, and mm-hmm. it's dark blue. Mm-hmm. And then after a second, it clicks to a light blue screen yeah. with a question mark, and I don't know where to go from there.
Now, have you tried opening files with it, or is it just completely dead in the water?
It's just dead in the water.
Yeah, you can't use the menu or anything.
No.
Yeah.
And then when it clicks off, you know, I go to click it off.
Yeah.
It'll say, you need to reinstall QuickTime.
Yeah.
It's okay. I yeah. click that on.
Yeah.
Then it comes back and it says, can't load, and you've got an error number.
Have you tried fully uninstalling it and reinstalling it?
That I have done.
Yeah, and that still doesn't fix it.
That doesn't fix it.
I'm not sure what's going on here.
In fact, I've even sent a link out to a friend to see if he can run it, in case it's my computer. But I have other other emails with attachments and so forth that I used to run 3-4 days ago. Now I can't run them at all.
Oh, so now not only is QuickTime not working, but you've lost the ability to run these other files?
Yeah, the files that, they send you out to a link to have them run.
Yeah.
And the video clips and so forth, right. And they don't run.
Ah, it sounds like a mess. do they normally run in QuickTime, or would they not run in Windows Media Player?
They just run in QuickTime. I tried it in...
You're on Windows, yes?
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Windows XP.
Okay.
And I put the, I pulled the thing out and put it on the desktop and then opened it up and then, then right-clicked it, and then you have several programs to run it on, and I tried and it didn't work.
I'm thinking, when you install QuickTime, it's kind of funny. It doesn't actually download the full file and install from that. You download a stub, a small program, which then is an installer and downloader, and it downloads the rest and installs it. A lot of people are doing that now. I don't like it, because if anything goes wrong in that process, you'll have a bad install, which you can't very easily recover from.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if that's maybe what happened. I wish you could do, and I don't think there's any way to do it, is download the full copy of QuickTime. And install it from the hard drive instead of trying to install it over the net. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what's wrong, and I don't know how you fix it. You've done the one thing that I would try, which is uninstall fully. I mean, really get rid of that thing and do it again. Do you have any other media players on there? Real Player?
I have Real Player. I have Winamp and all of those, okay, and they all function great.
So you're using a bunch of different ones. But I'll tell you, nowadays you really want QuickTime, because a lot of stuff won't play in anything else.
Yeah.
Mm.
I went into the add and subtract the program,
right,
and I got rid of those. I did it in real time, just normal.
Yeah.
Then I said, well, let me do this in safe mode. So I pulled them out in safe mode.
You've done everything, John. I just don't
know. Reloaded it the same way.
Yeah.
And even went in as administrator and did that.
Some of this, there are more problems with QuickTime on Windows than there are on Macs. And I just have to think it's because Apple really isn't as good developing software for Windows as they are for their own operating system. I hear similar problems with iTunes, and often, by the way, the iTunes problems end up coming down to QuickTime 7 and issues with that and installing that. I'm afraid I don't have a good answer for you. I don't know what's wrong, and you've done the stuff that I would suggest to do. So all I can say is keep listening. If somebody has some suggestions, something similar that's happened to them, call us, 1-800-520-1KFI, or go to the website. In fact, given that we're pretty much at the end of the show in a few minutes, I think that's probably the best thing. Go to KFIAM640.com. Click my name, Leo Laporte, on the left, and just add to the comments any thoughts you have about this. Because I'll tell you, I don't know. That's one of the drawbacks to doing a show like this, is I can't reach out through the radio and mess with your computer. I can only guess what's wrong. And in this case, I don't have a clue. I really don't. Dean Adeli is coming up at 2, but I'll be back tomorrow, 11 to 2. And if you've got a solution, we can call talk then. Of course, John and Ken with a fresh show, 3 to 5. Rod Bernson from 5 to 7. Wayne Resnick with The Real Story from 7 to 10. A great evening ahead on KFI. Brian, Los Angeles, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Leo. I'm a consultant, and I work from home using terminal server connections and PC Anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I recently got a laptop, and I'd like to be able to use it at public hotspots,
yes,
and I was concerned what my security issues would be.
Now, as I remember, PC Anywhere has encryption, does it not?
It does have an option for encryption.
Okay. Does it say what kind of encryption?
I'm not in front of it, so I can't.
I would imagine it had. I mean, there's no reason why they wouldn't have good, strong encryption. So, if you establish the connection and do it with an encrypted connection, you'd be absolutely secure.
Is the same true with a terminal server connection?
Windows terminal server Does it use RDP? I'm trying to remember. I think it does.
I think it does.
There are known exploits with RDP, man-in-the-middle attacks and things like that. It is, on the face of it, secure. Microsoft will say it's secure, but there are RDP exploits. And I do not consider, nor does Steve Gibson, the guy I do the security podcast with, consider RDP secure. That's the Windows Remote Desktop Protocol. So if you are using terminal services, I should say, and RDP, you would probably want to establish a VPN tunnel to where you're going first and do it through that. That would be secure, guaranteed.
Okay. Makes sense. Thank you.
If you can VPN it, that's the way to go. And if you don't have VPN at work, which I'm sure you do, it sounds like it's pretty heavy-duty setup, you can always go to somewhere like hotspotvpn.com. That's what I use. And essentially, they rent VPN servers. It's $8.88 a month. You put VPN on your machine. It works with Windows or Mac or Linux. You just put a VPN client on your machine, and I log in, and then I'm secure, whether I'm at a hotspot or I'm in a hotel. It's really great for peace of mind. So in theory, remote desktop protocol is secure, but in practice, there are many exploits against it. There are man-in-the-middle attacks. And you really do have to worry about a man-in-the-middle if you're in a public internet. Man-in-the-middle is where it's kind of like what you would imagine. There's a guy in the middle in between the transaction that pretends to Brian that he's work and pretends to work that he's Brian. And by doing so, he's able to intercept the remote desktop traffic, look at it, then pass it on. He can either examine it or he can even modify it and pass it on. So it is risky. You'd be much safer in a public hotspot if you're using remote desktop of any kind to a VPN. Set up a VPN session, and then all of your data is encrypted inside this tunnel, and it's completely secure. 147, 13 away from 2, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
When you see breaking news, don't try to fix it. Call the professionals in the KFI News Department, 323-CALL-KFI.
153, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Robert's in Northridge. Welcome to KFI, Robert. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Well, I bought my wife an iPod for her birthday a year ago, November, from Costco. It's an HP-branded iPod.
Aren't you a sweetie? That's a nice
gift. I thought I was. The 40 gig.
Yeah.
And it's got a problem with the click wheel that evidently is a very common problem, the Apple store said, that they know how to fix it, but they won't fix it. They said Apple won't touch it.
Because it's an HP.
She contacted HP. They told her that they're phasing out that that line, and that the only thing they'll do is if they'll send her a new one for $300.
Oh, man.
And you can buy, obviously, a new one for $300, so they're not doing her any favors.
Is it out of warranty?
Yeah, it's a little over a year in November.
How much did Apple want to fix it? I mean, I imagine they would fix if you paid them.
The Apple store told her they will not touch it because it has a branding on it.
You know, I would try again, maybe find a friendlier Apple store or somebody, because really it's the same exact product, and if they know how to fix it, ask them how much it would cost. The other thing you could do is maybe go to an Apple authorized repair center, which they may be a little more flexible on that.
Okay, well, my wife, of course, already fired off a nasty letter to the heads of HP, so we'll see what happens there.
I think rightly so. I mean, HP made these for a very brief period of time and decided to get out of that business when Carly Fiorina was fired. It's probably, you know, the click wheel part itself is probably not that expensive and probably fairly easy to replace.
Well, it sounded like that's what the Apple people seem to say, but they just didn't want to touch it. So I guess we could try that other avenue.
I would say don't give up with Apple. I think it may say that in their policy manual, but these guys have some leeway. And if the Apple store itself won't do it, I think almost certainly, you know, somewhere like Mac Enthusiasts or an Apple authorized repair company. You know, a lot of these guys will only do the computers, but if you can find one that does iPods, that's a repair. A repair is a repair. I mean, I don't see any reason why they would turn away your business.
Well, great. I appreciate that. Can I ask you, somewhere in the future, I've never heard you talk about geocaching. I wondered if you'd
I love the idea. Have you done it, Robert?
Yes, actually.
You're
a geocacher? I just bought my first one about 3 weeks ago, and I've taken the kids, and I've hid my first one with the kids,
fun.
And we're having a blast.
We've done segments on TV, and I've interviewed geocachers, but I haven't done it in a long time. Why don't you tell us about geocaching?
Well, basically, you use your GPS system in your car. If you go to geocaching.com, and you can look up by your zip code, they'll show you all the caches, as they call them. I call them to my kids, I call them treasures.
Isn't it fun?
And they're hidden all over I'm in the San Fernando Valley, and they're hidden all over. And you use your GPS to narrow down them and then find them. They can be anywhere from a tiny little pillbox where all you do is sign a log to up to, you know, a 5-gallon can. We actually found one that was large enough that had a bunch of trade items in it, and one of them was a Game Boy game that my little boy went nuts over.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, it was great. And the only rule they say is if you take something, you need to leave something.
Yeah, you don't want to get rid of the treasure. You got to make sure there's always treasure there.
Exactly.
And then the logbooks are fun because you can see all the people who've been there.
Oh, yeah, and they've been doing it since, I think, 2000. So sometimes you come across ones that have been there for 3-4 years.
I'm told by geocachers that pretty much any metropolitan area you go to, or even small town, there's caches all over that, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's on Google Earth. And you can back up out of the world of Google Earth or zoom into your area, and all the little icons will light up right near you and show you in Google Earth where they are.
This is a really interesting hobby that just sprang up out of nowhere. I mean, there's always been orienteering and things like this with compasses and maps, but GPS enabled something very new, and I don't know who thought it up, but I think what a fun thing to do.
Yep, and I just bought a new iWay, the 350C, which I'm having little mixed feelings on, but all in all, I'm enjoying it.
That's a car-based one?
Yeah.
Now, there is geocaching where it's a little more rigorous, where you use a handheld GPS and you're going off-road.
They go deep into mountains, and, I mean, there's ones hidden in the ocean where you have to dive for them. I mean, they're all over. But so far with the kids, I'm doing the ones you pull over to the curb and find it at the park and things like that.
You've inspired me. I think that would be so much fun to do with my kids. I think I might try it.
It is. Mine are 7 and 10, and they think it's
adventure.
Really neat.
Yeah.
Yep, and we're having fun with it.
Geocaching.com if you want to know more about it. It's really, I think, it's taken the world by storm. I really think it's a fun new sport. Hey, thank you for the call. I really appreciate it, Robert.
Thank you.
Good luck with the iPod, because that is frustrating.
I appreciate it, Leo. Take care. I enjoy your show.
Thanks for listening. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Dean Adell's coming up next, and it's a fresh John and Ken. Stay tuned to KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center. Have a great day.
2006.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.